We shall turn now to the psalm we previously read, Psalm 74, which according to the title you'll see is another one of the psalms of Asaph. As we said before, there are a number of psalms now that are ascribed to Asaph. Whether they were actually written by him or for him is a question that has been debated for a long time. Some are even of a mind that they were directed to the chief singer who set the singing in the worship of God, and that he was still referred to as Asaph, even if he was simply a descendant of Asaph. But this psalm here is certainly a psalm of instruction. You see, according to the title, Maskell of Asaph, indicating that it is a teaching psalm. It is intended not only to be informative and to be used in the public praise of God, but it is a psalm that we are to be instructed by as we read it and indeed as we sing it. But it is a psalm that is not referring merely to the experience, the individual experience of one of God's saints, but it is a psalm, as you will see, that is for the collective church or the people of God. The psalmist at the beginning of the psalm begins, "O God, why hast thou cast us off?" And you will see in verse 2, he prays, "Remember thy congregation." And you can see then that it is intended to be instructive to the wider church, not just for individuals, but for the church in general. And that is how we will endeavor to consider it, a psalm for the church, but in a particular condition. The church in desperation. This is a psalm for the church in desperation. And you will see what the great concern is. In verse 22, there is this plea before God, "Arise, O God, and plead thine own cause." This is the great concern, God's cause. Now, that is something that we need to give heed to and we need to inquire about, because when we come to pray before God, we should indeed inquire, well, what motivates me to pray as I do? What is the great concern that I have when I come to God? Are my prayers selfish? Or are they prayers for the glory and honor of God? The cause that I'm concerned about, is it God's cause? We can be so taken up with our parochial interests, and rightly so, but we can be taken up to such an extent we forget the needs of the wider church. We overlook the condition of the church in general. And so often we confine our prayers to the needs or the desires of the denomination that we belong to, and we can forget about everyone else. But you'll see that the psalmist here is referring to the cause that is God's. God's cause. The psalmist doesn't speak about our cause or our witness or our particular branch of the church, but it's the cause of God. And that is something that we need to be concerned about in our day and generation. Arise, O God, the church is pleading. Arise, O God, plead thine own cause. Now, in considering then as the psalm of the church in desperation, you will see, as we've already said, it is God's cause that the church is concerned with. But it is that the cause of God might be revived, that it might be quickened, that it might be reformed. You will see when we go back to the beginning of the psalm, there are a number of questions asked. O God, why hast thou cast us off forever? You will remember that before the Ark of the Covenant, when it was taken by the Philistines, and the Israelites were longing for its return, David was desiring its return, and as the people were missing that symbol of the presence of God for them, we're told, and the time was long. It was long because they felt the need for the presence of God, and they were being denied that presence, and the time was long. They began to yearn and long for God to return to his abode in their midst. And when God's absence is felt among his people, it becomes long. Because they love God's nearness and desire it, even one day of his absence is a long time to them. One hour of consciousness of the absence of God's presence is a long time for a true child of God and for the true church of Christ. And this is what we read, O God, why hast thou cast us off forever? Why doth thine anger smoke against the sheep of thy pasture? You can see immediately, and this is, as I said, a psalm of instruction, that honesty is required when we present ourselves before God. We cannot pretend what we're not, and we cannot pretend that things are better than they are. Here's the acknowledgement. God has cast us off, and it's for a reason. Why is he angry? We're the sheep of his pasture. What have we done to provoke the anger of God? And then in verse 2, remember thy congregation. We belong to thee. We are thine. And yet things are not right between us. Things are not as they should be. Remember thy congregation which thou hast purchased of old, the rod of thine inheritance which thou hast redeemed, this Mount Zion wherein thou hast dwelt. The question is asked, why does God be angry? Why is it that he has cast off even his own sheep? And then the cry is, remember. Do not forget us forever. Do not leave us in our desolation. Do not leave us in this condition in which we find ourselves. And you can see how bad it is in verse 3. Lift up thy feet unto the perpetual desolations. As we have it in the metrical, our long desolations. Lift up thy feet unto the perpetual desolations. Here's the acknowledgement. We're not prospering. We're not in a good state. We're not in a healthy condition. Where do we find? Do you think tonight, where will you find a congregation of people? A people assembled in the place of prayer that acknowledge such things before God, who honestly acknowledge the church is not in a healthy condition. The church is not prospering in our day and generation. We are not prospering. We're not progressing. We're not advancing. We tend to puff ourselves up as though, well, we're peculiarly better than others. We're doing something that others are not. We're standing for things that others are not. We're witnessing for things that others are failing to do, and so on. It is very obvious from this psalm that this church, this people, are conscious of their condition and their need, and that in itself is the beginning of blessing. When you go over to the seven churches in Asia, there in the third chapter of Revelation, the condition of the seven churches is presented to us, and we have the church in Laodicea. And this is what we're told concerning that church, because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing. We don't need any reviving. We don't need any reformation. There's nothing wrong with us. There might be something wrong with the church in Ephesus or the church in Colossae or in Philadelphia, but not us. We're fine. We have need of nothing and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Those words are startling words. And knowest not that thou art. You do not know your real condition. You are being deceived because you think that you're doing well. You think that you're prospering. You don't imagine you've any lack or any needs, and all the time you don't know what God knows, that you're wretched, you're miserable. Now you would think, you and I know from life's experience, if you feel miserable, you know it. You see the kind of blindness, the extent of blindness that can come upon the Church of Christ. Here are those in this congregation, this church in Asia, and they think that they are prospering, totally ignorant of what God thinks. And here in the Psalm 74, we have the church acknowledging we're not in a healthy condition. We're not prospering. We're not in a good way. But because we're not, it's the glory and the honor of God that suffers. Arise, O God, and plead thine own cause. We are part of that cause. We are bound up with it. And it's because of our condition that God's honor and God's name is, as it were, being dragged down into the gutter. But you will see that these desolations are perpetual. It seems they've been in existence for a long period of time. They're perpetual. There's no improvement. And you see, until the church is honest, and I believe that is one of the things we're going to have to learn as a generation. We're going to have to learn to be honest before God and tell God honestly, we need him to come. We need him to revive his work. We need him to lift up his feet unto our long desolations since the Reformation and since the times of spiritual awakening. Since the church has been in perpetual decline everywhere. I was amazed listening to a lecture by Ken Ham recently, And he was showing pictures of the churches in the United Kingdom that are closed down. Everywhere you could go, massive churches that used to be packed with hundreds of worshippers, and now they're turned into cinemas, into restaurants, high-class restaurants, into pleasure centers, into gyms. They're turned into, one was even turned into a Hindu temple. Such is the terrible decline. But we don't seem to be too much alarmed. We just say it happens. And if it happens, well, there's nothing we can do about it. I believe that we need, as a generation, to become desperate before God, broken-hearted, to really, truly, honestly lament the low state of the Lord Zion. Now here in this psalm, the church is crying out to God out of its impoverishment. In verse 19, you will see the cry, will deliver not the soul of thy turtledove, unto the multitude of the wicked, forget not the congregation of thy poor forever. Acknowledging we're poor. We just noted the church in Laodicea. They didn't know they were poor. They thought they were rich and increased with goods. And God said all the time they didn't know they were poor. But here is the church acknowledging we are poor. We don't have the resources. We can't meet the needs. We are just so impoverished. We are poor. Verse 20, have respect unto the covenant, for the dark places of the earth are full of the habitations of cruelty. Oh, let not the oppressed return ashamed. Let the poor and needy praise thy name. Now when we meet here this evening, we've come here for a purpose. We call this our weekly prayer meeting. Yes, we go through the Word of God and we consider it together, but we've come to call on God. We've come to pray. How needy do we feel? How needy do we feel as a congregation? How poor do we feel? How desolate do we feel? Are we content? Are we happy that things will just carry on? We'll just keep the wheels turning in motion week by week? Or do we feel that we need God to arise? That we need Him to lift up His feet unto our perpetual desolations? Are we here just to remind God of the things that He knows? Or have we come here really concerned when we think of those who meet with us, the young, their spiritual condition and their spiritual state, those who have had connections with the congregation in the past? They don't come now. They're not interested now. They've forsaken the gospel and the means of grace. Does it really concern us? If God doesn't do anything, it won't matter. Is that how we feel? C.H. Spurgeon, on one occasion, when he was praying in his own congregation, pleading with God, he was saying that God must answer. He had to answer. He says, we are so desperate, he was praying to God, if you don't answer, we perish. And that's the kind of desperation we really need. Now, you can see that this church, in its desperation, is expressing the real experiences that has gone through or is going through of trials and troubles. Not only are we desolate, but in verse 4, thine enemies roar in the midst of thy congregation. The church has been infiltrated by the enemies of God. And this is something that they bring as a burden and as a concern to God. Thine enemies roar. They're not silent. They are so confident that they roar. They let it be known they're there. They're there to do damage. They're there to hurt the cause of God. Thine enemies roar in the midst of thy congregation. They used to roar out there outside. They didn't belong. But now they have come right in, and they're seeking the destruction. You can see in verse 8, they're saying in their hearts, let us destroy them together. It's not just here the concern to harm them, damage them, weaken them. No, destroy them. That's the purpose, the intent. And how do they do it? Do they do it from outside? No, they seek to do it from inside. They're roaring in the within the midst of thy congregations. They even set up their ensigns for signs. They make it very obvious we're here. We're taking over. We're taking control. And this is happening again and again throughout the universal church. Denominations, you can go to America, you can go to Europe, you can go to any part. And what will you find? Churches that once were orthodox and were renowned for their orthodoxy have been infiltrated by liberalism and modernism and so on. And the whole structure is being undermined and eroded from within. Little wonder then the cry goes up to God in desperation. The church is being weakened from within. And then you can see in verse 5, a man was famous according as he had lifted up axes upon the thick trees. But now they break down the carved work thereof at once with axes and hammers. And what the psalmist is speaking about is the construction of the house of God. Men use their energy to build the house of God. Now they're using their energy to pull it down. So you see, when we think our day is a dark day, it's nothing new. Here we see the church way back centuries ago struggling, going through trials and troubles, wrestling with the enemies within, in addition to the enemies who are seeking to destroy from outside. There's nothing new in the experience of the Church of Christ. They break down the carved work. All the beauty of God's sanctuary, they seek to destroy it. They have cast fire into thy sanctuary. They have defiled by casting down the dwelling place of thy name. You see, that's what's troubling them. They're not seeking to destroy the church for its own sake. But the attack is being made. It's God that they're against. It's God that they're opposed to, and they have burned up the synagogues of God. That's why the psalmist then pleads, arise, O God. It's thy cause. It's thy cause that's under attack. It's thy cause that's been undermined. It's thy cause that needs reviving and needs awakening. But then, you will see there in the psalm, the church, that is undergoing trials and has undergone trials and tribulations, is pleading with God and has obviously been pleading for some time. But because it is the true church, it cannot give up. It cannot resign to the enemy. It cannot give way, even though it's difficult and they feel their impoverishment, their great need that drives them to cry to God. Yet, they cannot forsake that cause, as we have it in the Psalm 102. They take pleasure even in her dust. Her very stones are precious. The very ruins are still held in regard. And that's how you know the true church. Through testing and trying times, you will find there's a sifting. There always has been historically. And there will be those who will pack their bags because things are not prospering. We're not enjoying the life of the church. We're not getting any pleasure out of it. And so we're forsaking it. How many there are today? And, you know, the standards have lowered terribly. Our good friend who was here last Wednesday evening, we were conversing in the manse, and he was telling me that he was taking the services in a church one Lord's Day. And after the morning service, one of the elders came up to him and said, "Well, I won't see you this evening. I won't be at the service this evening, Mr. Dennison, because I'm flying out on my holidays." This is how things have deteriorated and changed. And this is, you see, the time of sifting when you discover, well, who really is on the Lord's side? Who really does care for the Lord's Zion? Who really does have a heart for the honor of God? And here amidst all the trials and the troubles, verse 10, listen to the language, verse 9 to get the connection. We see not our signs, we see the enemy's signs. We see their banners. We see them manifesting themselves, heralding their own causes. We see not our signs. There is no more any prophet. Seems God is silent. But we cannot forsake the cause that belongs to God because it isn't our cause. And there you see the psalmist saying, "Neither is there among us any that knoweth how long. O God, how long shall the adversary reproach? O God, how long?" But we cannot give up. We wait in desolation. We wait under trial, in the midst of afflictions. We wait in our desperation, but we continue to wait. How long? Oh God, come for our salvation. You can sense the desperation, the longing, the yearning for God to arise and do something. But they cannot forsake the cause, no matter how low it is, no matter how dark the day is. The time of sifting sometimes in the church becomes very necessary. And sometimes we can become concerned and we can become anxious. And sometimes ministers, elders can become alarmed when they see, well, he goes, she drifts, they leave, this, that, and the other. But God does sift his church. There's no question of it. He sifts his church. And it is a sifting time in the church in our day and in our generation. But those who are truly the Lord's, and the cause that is God's is a burden on their spirits and on their hearts. They are asking how long, but because they do long for prosperity in Zion. They long for it, they yearn for it, and they pray for it, and they cannot give up praying for it. You can see in the psalm that the psalmist, on behalf of the congregation, as it were, the Lord's congregation, reflects back on what God has done to give them encouragement. Though their day is a dark day, though their day is a day of small things, they know that their God has the power to do great things. And they go back and they, in verse 12, say, For God is my King of old, working salvation in the midst of the earth, and then speaks of the great deliverances that God has wrought in the past. And that is a source of encouragement. And although our day is a day of small things, we do know that God has done great things for his church in the past. We know that. We know what God did at Pentecost when he came and multitudes were converted and God was seen to be working on behalf of his own cause. At the Reformation throughout Europe and in days of reviving in America, in Europe, in Australia too. And we know what God is capable of doing. We know what he can do. And we know his arm is not shortened that it cannot save. And we know that his ear isn't heavy that it cannot hear. And that's what here the congregation of the Lord knew. But they're crying out, why? How long? How long is it going to be that the enemy will continue to blaspheme God's name, continue its course of destruction, continue to follow its agenda of blasphemy against God. Then when we come down to verse 18, after considering the great things that God has done in the past, then we hear this petition, remember this, that the enemy hath reproached, O Lord, and that the foolish people have blasphemed thy name. If you go through the psalm and just look at how many times the psalmist actually refers to God, thy name, thy cause, thy synagogues and so on, it's very obvious that it is God's cause that is the burden of the people of God. The church is pleading then, but persevering, and then the church is expressing what its burden is before God. When we come here on a Wednesday evening, a Friday, the last Friday of each month, do we feel burdened? We might, yes, say, well, I'm burdened because I'm weary. I'm burdened because I'm tired. I'm burdened because I'm tried. I'm burdened because I'm frustrated. I'm burdened for this and that and the other reason. And we're all human. We're all frail creatures. That's the fact of it. But he remembers that we are dust. We tend to forget that. God knows we're dust. He remembers we're dust. He remembers when we come here, even this evening, that's all we are. We're dust. He knows how frail we truly are. And my, when you think of the dust, you need a gust of wind and the dust is carried away. That's how light dust is. He remembers that we're dust. And he doesn't expect us to be iron when we're dust. He doesn't expect us or demand of us to be steel when we're dust. But this is what he promises. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. And I know people might think, well, that's referring to spiritual strength. No doubt that is true. But I have always been of a mind and of an opinion that it refers to more than that. And I believe with all my heart that it does refer to physical, mental strength as well. They that wait upon the Lord. And that doesn't mean they're waiting for the Lord. They're waiting like a servant upon the Lord. They are serving him as a waiter stands in the home of some aristocrat, and the servants are standing there waiting to be bidden to serve a meal, to serve their Lord or whatever. They're waiting upon him. And the Lord is saying, they that wait upon him will be given strength by him for every requirement that he makes upon them. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. And they shall walk and not faint. And then in contrast, the prophet says, even the young men shall be weary. And they shall lack strength, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. God gives strength to dust. That's an amazing wonder. Strength given to mere dust to serve him. And here we have these who are poor, the church in a poor and in a feeble condition, but burdened not merely because she's weak, burdened not merely because she's poor, but the great burden is the honor of God. It's God's cause. The enemies are blaspheming God's name. They are mocking God's cause. That's the great burden. And we often think, when you see, and I hear it constantly from people, when you begin to talk to them, oh, well, I left church years ago. It was so full of hypocrisy. And so many that were Christians and leaders in the church were just hypocrites. They weren't sincere. They weren't genuine. And when we hear regularly of pastors and their having affairs with somebody else's wife and the immorality for which they are disciplined and so on, we have to acknowledge the professing church is in a sorry state. But you see, we can talk about it. And then we can adopt the attitude, well, it doesn't happen among us. You won't find that in our little flock. You'll find it in the mega churches. But we don't have it in our little flock. You see, the cause that is here, the burden of the people of God, is God's cause. What harm does sin do to God's cause? What blasphemy does sin amongst the people of God cause? I sometimes think we forget it. And we think if we can sweep all these things under the carpet, if we can forget them and put them out of our minds, the world will forget them too. Isn't it interesting that people out there in the world, they don't forget the things that Christians forget. And when they will cast up things that happen in the church that shouldn't happen, and sometimes Christians are scratching their head. I don't remember it well, but You might remember it, but we won't forget it. And that's what we're up against in the day and age in which we live. And when we come here on a Wednesday evening, and when we come here on a Friday evening, we ought to come asking God to give us a genuine burden for His honor, a genuine burden for His cause, that God would yet arise and plead the cause that is His. It is not our cause. It's not our church. It's not our witness. We so often talk that way about our witness and our cause, and it's all ours. But when the church meets and faces with reality, then it's God's cause. Are we burdened for God's cause? And if we are, we will be living and behaving very, very carefully. We won't want anyone to point the finger at us and say, well, I have no time for Christianity because of him or because of her. I work with him. I know what he's like. I'm a neighbor to her and I know what she's like. She's supposed to be a Christian. He's supposed to be a Christian. I want nothing to do with Christianity. Isn't that what we're up against so often? And if we really are concerned for God's cause, for the Church of Jesus Christ, we will pray day by day seriously for grace to be upright, that no one will be able to point the finger and say, I want nothing to do with Christ or His cause when I see you and when I see how you behave, how you talk, how you conduct your affairs. Here is the church being honest before God and acknowledging we're in a low state, but begging God to come. And in verse 23, as the psalm is concluding, listen to the petition. Forget not the voice of thine enemies, the tumult of those that rise up against thee increaseth continually. And if we don't see that day by day in our own experience, we must be blind. The tumult of the ungodly in parliament, in society, rises day by day and increaseth. It increases continually. We wonder, what law are they going to pass next? What legislation are they going to introduce next? We're living in dark times, and listen, I sometimes say to my wife, I wonder what our grandchildren are going to be faced with if things keep going as they're going. What are they going to meet with? And there are little ones in the congregation. And when we're in our graves, they will be, God willing, faced with the reality of society. What will it be like? That ought to burden us. That ought to concern us. That ought to drive us to our knees, that God would yet arise and plead the cause that is His own. But we shall leave it there. May God bless His word.